The United States is hacked by everybody. That includes Russia and China.
President-elect Donald Trump wants to block countries, including China, from hacking U.S. data. It's Thursday, January 12th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Welcome, and you're a part of the program. Log on now and join us on our VOA Asia Facebook page. Also ahead, South Korea reacts to the North's missile claims. Real problems dealing with fake news in Indonesia. Stopping corruption in China. And new Chinese fitness technology. Let's get started right now with today's VOA Asia. President-elect Donald Trump has directly addressed the media in his first formal press conference since his election victory. It was streamed live on our VOA Asia Facebook page, and if you didn't see it then, you may still view the entire video at VOA Asia. Mr. Trump was asked a number of questions on a variety of issues, including allegations that Russia tried to influence the election by hacking into private computer files and disseminating information in a manner intended to sway voter opinion. Mr. Trump says he will unveil a plan to counter such hacking efforts.
Within 90 days, we will be coming up with a major report on hacking defense. How do we stop this new phenomena, fairly new phenomena? Because the United States is hacked by everybody. That includes Russia and China and everybody.
Well, Mr. Trump, as you heard, also acknowledged China as one of the alleged active hacking nations he's seeking to block. We turn to VOA senior national correspondent Jim Malone for more as we begin to get a feel for some of the directions Donald Trump is intending to go once he becomes president next week.
Right. Now, the interesting thing was at his news conference, the first one as president-elect, he did accept publicly that Russia was behind the hacking, but he's always quick to expand. He likes to mention China and other unnamed actors. At the same time, he was pretty vehement in trying to knock down these unsubstantiated intelligence reports that tied him to Russia, talked about them getting some compromising material on him, and the possibility that there was collusion between members of his campaign staff and Russia to do the campaign hacking.
Donald Trump has talked extensively about the intelligence community and questioning their findings or abilities when, you know, we know these are some really sharp top people working on these issues.
You know, he said again that it was a disgraceful that the thing leaked out. I mean, what we found out is this ongoing kind of feud with the intelligence community is not going to change. I do worry it sometimes they may try to politicize it by putting it on, say, President Obama's intelligence team, even though those folks, as we know, are to work as civil servants and not be responsive to politics. The other thing out of the press conference to me was his manner, his style. There's substance there, but he got combative at one point with a reporter from CNN that's been doing reporting on these allegations involving Russia. And, you know, we could be in for a wild ride here the next 4 years or more with the way he's, I think, already signaled he's going to be dealing with the press.
A lot of these issues were domestic issues, but the interaction is really what we were kind of watching to see how Donald Trump is going to be as president, or at least get a glimpse of how the next 4 years might play out.
And speaking of interactions, I mean, I think there's going to be more on how he's going to separate himself from his business. They kind of took a halfway measure saying he's going to have his sons run it. Won't be in a blind trust that some people would hope that he doesn't have any knowledge of what's going on. So I think moving forward, there's going to be more questions. They said they won't do any overseas projects. That's interesting. But they will continue with domestic, and that could open themselves up to more scrutiny and questions.
All right. Well, more questions for Jim Malone as this progresses. Thank you, Jim.
You bet.
We invite you to read and see more on our top story, including the full video of President-elect Trump's press conference, by visiting and following our Facebook page, VOA Asia. These are among the top Asia stories that are currently trending at voanews.com. Beijing takes a pivotal technology lead in South China Sea. Taiwan scrambles jets and Navy as China aircraft carrier enters Taiwan Strait. Collaborate with Trump, prepare, or retaliate? Chinese CEOs have differing opinions. Thai Prime Minister says King seeks change in pending constitution. Media reports say Japan is looking at steps to allow emperor's abdication. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more at Facebook. VOA Asia is the place to go, and also on our website, voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. The South Korean Defense Ministry, in a white paper released Wednesday, warned that North Korea has made considerable progress in its nuclear capabilities in 2016, with more fissile material and improved warhead miniaturization technology. It's estimated Pyongyang possesses enough plutonium to manufacture 10 nuclear devices. On Sunday, the North said it was prepared to launch an intercontinental ballistic missile at any time. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter, in his final news conference, indicated any North Korean ICBM considered a threat would be intercepted and destroyed.
If the missile is threatening, it will be intercepted. If it's not threatening, we won't necessarily do so, because it may be more to our advantage to, first of all, save our interceptor inventory, and second, to gather intelligence from the flight.
That's a concerning position, according to RAND Corporation analyst Bruce Bennett in a conversation with VOA's Victor Beatty.
If we don't know whether or not there's a nuclear weapon on the missile, then it's not just a matter of where the missile is going to land. It could be 30, 50 kilometers up in the air and explode and cause electromagnetic pulse damage out hundreds and hundreds of kilometers to locations. We don't really know how much damage that would be, but it's a potential. So if they send a missile somewhere between Hawaii and the West Coast, we probably have to intercept it, because we aren't going to know whether or not there's a nuclear warhead on it, and we can't afford to take the electromagnetic pulse damage that could be done.
Referencing President-elect Donald Trump's recent tweet about the North Korea nuclear threat, saying such a missile launch will, quote, not happen. Do you interpret that as saying that any launch of an ICBM, or would this be actual one that was considered to be an imminent threat?
I think the Trump comment was any launch would be potentially intercepted. I don't think it's limited to something that's fired in the direction of the West Coast or Hawaii or Alaska. I think the Trump comment would be stronger than the Carter comment. So the problem is, Carter's saying, let's let it fly and let's gain some intelligence from it. Well, the whole reason for the UN Security Council resolution that prohibits such launches is to prevent North Korea from being able to improve their design as they discover what goes right and what goes wrong. We don't want them to demonstrate whether or not their reentry vehicle works. We want to destroy it before they can find out whether or not it works. So they have no confidence that it'll work, and in fact, it probably won't until they've tried a variety of different technologies. It's like the Musudan missile, which has failed 7 out of 8 tests. We don't want them firing more Musudans and potentially confirming whether or not they've got the problems fixed.
Bruce Bennett said the United States cannot allow an ICBM test to take place, permitting the North to continue perfecting its technology. Happening now in Asia, the U.S. Treasury Department has today added 7 North Koreans and 2 North Korean government entities to its sanctions list. Reports of systematic government-sanctioned human rights abuses, including forced labor, led to the additional sanctions. We'll hear tomorrow from Assistant Secretary of State Tom Malinowski in an exclusive interview with our Korean reporters right here on VOA Asia. We're happy to have you with us on VOA Asia.
President, I want to thank a lot of the news organizations, for some of whom have not treated me very well over the years, a couple in particular, and they came out so strongly against that fake news.
President-elect Donald Trump, at his press conference Wednesday, addressing reports that Russia possibly has damaging or compromising information about him. Whether true or not, fake news is becoming a greater concern around the world, as sophisticated, professional-looking websites can easily fool people with information that's not correct. Fake news can be relatively harmless, or it can be used with serious intent to influence or harm. On yesterday's program, I discussed the issue with VOA Indonesian reporter Eva Masriva as the government there tries to deal with the proliferation of fake news. Continuing the discussion, authorities are also dealing with questions of censorship or unfairly targeting groups as fake news is confronted.
The government has these specific rules that they just implemented in 2008, where people who already have their own sites, or just like me, I have a Facebook account, Twitter account, this kind of account. Before 2008, nobody can touch it. What I want to put anything, what I want to put there, they cannot do anything. But now they can just take it down, or even take me to the court if I put something which is embarrassed the government or other people, other organization. So this kind of law has been affected. But since 2008, actually not too many people knows about this law until now, when the government start to close down these hoax sites. But then the Islamic, the radicals, the jihadists complain, why do you only pursue for the Islamic sites? What about the porn sites? We have like thousands of porn sites. The government never think about it. But the government said that, but this porn site is only about the moral stories kind of issues, which just really depend on us. How do we define porn, for example? But then this Islamic sites, they really trigger insecurity. They create chaos in the society. So that's why the government has to take further action instead of just let them go and go away with that.
It's a difficult question for the government, because now you're beginning to get into areas of potential censorship, or maybe targeting certain groups, or the perception that you're doing that.
Yes, there's a perception that government only goes out or pursue the radicals. But actually, Indonesia is a moderate. We used to be a moderate country where we can accept tolerance and people with different backgrounds, different religions. But now, because of the growing of the radicalism, people start question if someone from different backgrounds wants to be our leader. I can give you a sample like this. In this Indonesian capital, Jakarta, we're going to have there are three candidates wants to run to be the governor. One of them is an Indonesian Chinese Christian. But he gets a lot of popularity amongst us because he's the most honest one. People trust him so much, and he walked the talk. I mean, he really showed what he can do for the government. But this there's so many people who say that, no, I don't want to be led by the Christian. I don't want to be led by Chinese. But actually, we never take that as a big issue before. Why suddenly we want to make sure that this is a big issue. I don't want to be led by a Chinese. But actually, we have a Chinese governor before. We have a Christian governor before. Why does it so matter so much when it comes to this Ahok, the new one? Yeah.
Eva Masriva in our Indonesian service, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news alert from VOA Asia. If North Korea tests an intercontinental ballistic missile, the United States says it won't shoot it down unless it's deemed threatening. Pyongyang has never successfully fired an ICBM but continues to make progress. The U.S. Pentagon says it feels confident in its defense. South Korea is installing a missile defense system as a deterrent. All the big stories are on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. The Communist Party of China has approved a new set of rules that will soon place the party's 500,000 corruption investigators under stricter supervision. The intra-party regulation aims to standardize graft probes to ensure its team investigating corruption is itself not corrupt. Analysts say they're skeptical, saying such self-supervision rules may not be effective in exposing corrupt investigators. VOA's Lori London joins us with more details.
As details are yet to be released, the rules are said to be setting clear standards on how to handle corruption tips, how to check and review cases, and how to manage ill-gotten gains or assets. according to a report published on the commission's website Sunday. Investigators will also be advised to keep audio and video recordings throughout their interrogation processes while creating a registration system for those who make inquiries about or try to interfere in their cases. The report added, quote, "Trust in disciplinary officials cannot replace supervision." Addressing a media briefing on Monday, Wu Liang, Deputy Secretary of CCDI, further reiterated Party Chairman Xi's determination to crack down on both tigers and flies, powerful leaders, and grassroots bureaucrats. He added that the party's fight against corruption has gained a crushing momentum and huge progress, following surveys indicating a 93% approval rate for the party's anti-graft drive. That's up from 75% in 2012. Wu quoted Xi as saying, "The goal of ensuring officials dare not corrupt has been achieved, and the system of ensuring officials will not corrupt has been in place. We are building a dam to ensure that officials won't attempt to be corrupt." Commenting on the party's self-supervision rules, Jean-Pierre Cabestan, political science professor at Hong Kong Baptist University, said they only address concerns that anti-corruption investigators have become too powerful and there were no rules to limit or prevent them from abusing their powers. But whether the rules will work to better control CCDI members or separate the investigation of anti-corruption officials from prosecution remains to be seen. On the political front, Cabestan said such rules will help Xi strengthen his power, using the top anti-corruption watchdog to enhance political discipline while fighting against rival factions, which are opposed to him or have slowed down his implementation of reforms nationwide.
The discipline inspection work is not only kind of business to make party members and party leaders cleaner, but also to make them more obedient to the current political leadership.
The professor also added that he expects Xi to find ways to retain Wang Shen as head of CCDI after the party's 19th National Congress.
Developing at this hour in Asia, Myanmar's de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi sent a special envoy to Bangladesh to begin talks on the Rohingya crisis in the Rakhine state. The United Nations says 65,000 people have fled Myanmar in the past 3 months. Check out Steve Miller's Daily Asia Minute on Facebook at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, of course, it is the new year. Have you made a resolution? The most common is to get into better shape. People here in the United States and in Asia are increasingly trying out wearable devices to help them. VOA's Elizabeth Lee looks at one such wearable device. It's the brainchild of a Chinese immigrant who wanted to have an inexpensive portable coach.
Matt Knight loves boxing, but he's learned from experience that getting a trainer in San Francisco is not cheap.
Coming in for like a one-on-one session would have cost a ton of money for like the level of caliber that these guys were.
Knight searched around and found a wearable device called Move that coaches users in cardio boxing. Unlike passive wearable devices that only count a user's steps, Move is able to talk and coach Knight during workouts.
Try to keep your wrist straight.
Through an app on a mobile device.
Move doesn't necessarily give you the full guidance that you would get from a real-life coach, but it does guide you through the cardio aspects of it, which is actually one of the tougher parts of, you know, staying on top of while you're boxing, is that you run out of energy.
Right foot forward.
Knight used the product so often that Move hired him to test it. Besides cardio boxing, this waterproof device also coaches users in four other types of workouts, including swimming and cycling. Beijing native Meng Li, Move's co-founder, was inspired to develop this wearable coach while hard at work at another startup in Silicon Valley.
I find like I'm not as healthy and active as before, you know, and I start feeling like, you know, I need to work hard, I need to charge myself, but I don't have time to go to the gym or, you know, money to pay the trainer. So that's actually part of the reason how we started Move.
Lee says what makes her wearable device unique is how it tracks a user's movements.
We created both the sensor technology as well as the AI coaching in-house. So one focuses more on the hardware, the other focuses more on the software. So the sensor senses your movement in 3D space. For example, it senses your range of motion, it senses your rotation, it senses your orientation.
Fitness-oriented wearable devices are not only gaining popularity in the U.S., they are also trendy in many Asian countries, the reason behind this Chinese language promotional video.
In China, and the trend of fitness is growing so fast, and we see very similar behaviors and need from our consumers in China, and it's growing. But at the beginning, we didn't expect that. It was basically a surprise.
As with many immigrants who attend graduate school in the U.S., Lee decided to stay and work here. But she has a team of employees in China, and she expects more trips home as her three-year-old startup grows. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, San Mateo, California.
And we invite you, as the music fades out, to visit our VOA Asia Facebook page. You can actually see this report that Elizabeth did. A lot of interesting technology going on there. If you happen to be trying to get into better shape for the new year, as we often do. You've been listening to VOA Asia. If you happen to be in Myanmar, a special hello to you listening via our VOA Burmese Facebook. We're so happy to have you with us. We also have another Facebook page. It's VOA Asia. Stop by there when you have a chance. Also our website at voanews.com. Our director is Tracy Carter. Carl Starling is our engineer. Diane Gao, our managing editor. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Thank you so much for spending part of your day with us. Have a great day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Interfaith cooperation among religious communities around the world is a powerful counterbalance to hate, violence, and injustice, said U.S. Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, David Saperstein. This is especially true in countries afflicted by sectarian violence. In Kenya, for example, when Islamist gunmen suspected to be al-Shabaab attacked a bus in December 2015 and demanded that Christians and Muslims be separated, the driver of the bus said that the Muslims on board refused to be separated from their fellow Christian travelers. They told the militants to kill them all or leave them all alone, which incredibly the gunmen in the main did. Yet one man, Salah Farah, was injured while shielding Christians from the attack and later died. His brother Rashid told media that he hoped Salah's example would encourage Kenyans to live as one community and promote religious harmony. In Israel, there are examples of peace building through interfaith education that schools like the Tabitha School in Jaffa or the six hand-in-hand schools in cities all across Israel provide to Jewish, Muslim, Druze, and Christian students. In Turkey, members of Istanbul's tiny Greek Orthodox community, visitors from neighboring Greece and other faithful, attended an epiphany service led by Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew I, the spiritual leader of the world's Orthodox Christians in Istanbul, where the Patriarchate is based. A ceremony to bless the waters was also held in Izmir, Turkey's third largest city. It was the first official Epiphany ceremony there since the Greco-Turkish War ended in 1922, triggering a population exchange between Greece and Turkey. Although the Greek consulate in Izmir had organized a ceremony in 2006, it was the first time the Turkish government both approved and helped to organize it. It's a historic day here, and we're grateful to the local authorities and to the Patriarchate for making this happen, Tina Samolu, secretary of the Izmir Orthodox community, told Greek State TV. There is a power to be found when we advocate not just for people who share our beliefs, but also for those whose beliefs are profoundly different. When Jews advocate for Christians who are persecuted for their beliefs, when Christians advocate for Buddhists, when Hindus advocate for Muslims, when Muslims advocate for atheists, said Ambassador Saperstein. When we all recognize that if any one of us is not free to practice our beliefs, then none of us are.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.